The Con Guy Show, the official program of theconguy.com, is heard on the We Be Geeks Collective and on sci-fi.radio.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Helm, report.
Sir, there's Klingons on the starboard bow.
Starboard bow?
Starboard bow!
What are they doing there?
They seem to be waiting for the new episode of Earth Station Trek.
Science, what do we know about this Earth Station Trek?
It's a podcast that treks through the history of Star Trek, from the early days on NBC to the future on Paramount Plus and everywhere in between.
Navigation, how would one find such a podcast?
By setting coordinates for EarthStationTrek.com or by doing a sensor sweep of Spotify, iTunes, or any other quadrant where fine podcasts are available.
Captain, what are we going to do about the Klingons?
We come in peace, Commander. Weapon station, shoot to kill.
Shoot to kill. Kill!
Shoot to kill!
We're the Con Guys, and this is the Con Guy Show, coming to you straight from the nerdy heart of Hollywood, California.
And this is Jim with theconguy.com.
She's been here with theconguy.com.
Katie here, aka the Con Girl.
Zordon did not want five teenagers with attitude.
My name is Derek Sam.
I'm Danae Sam, and that's my brother.
We are your home for news, opinions, and interviews from the world of Comic-Cons and fandoms, your ultimate insiders for all things.
Hey, everybody. It has been a bit of time. It's been about a bit. It has been about a month. Try to say that real fast. It's been about a month. It's been about a month since we've had a podcast.
It's been about a month.
Show off. So anyways, thank you so much for tuning back in this week. My name is Jim. And I am one of your hosts here on the Con Guy Show, the Con Guy Live Show. And let's go around and introduce ourselves, starting up top with the Con Girl.
I'm assuming you mean me, because it says Con Girl on my thing. So I am Katie. I haven't been here in a bit, because some life things happened, but I am back. Hey, great, great timing, Ben. Great timing. Perfect timing for intros. So happy to be back talking about some cool movies. It's been a minute since I've had some movie chat with these lovely people. So,
Danae.
Howdy. My name is Danae. I am a Con Girl. I am half of the Samblings. I am a comedian and writer here in LA. I'm so glad to be back. I even thought it was a Con Guy happy hour. So I made a giant Lynchburg lemonade in my Batman cup. Looking forward to chat about some nerdy things.
A Lynchburg lemonade. That sounds awesome. By the way, this is a Con Guy happy hour. So cheers to everybody who is cheersing with me. The other half of the Samblings.
Hey, I'm the other half of the Samblings. My name is Derek. I'm one of the original Con Guys. And I was going to say that, like Katie, it's been a while since I've been here, but I think that's just because it's been a little while since we've done a regular Con Guy happy hour show. And I'm drinking this big thing of water tonight because I'm the only one here to watch the kids. So if you see me looking off to the side down here, it's because I'm seeing the baby monitor and I probably have to leave for a few minutes.
If Derek runs off, that's what's happening. All right, right there next to Derek, we do have a very special guest with us tonight because he has some love for one of the movies. Go ahead and introduce yourself, Con Kid.
What's up? I'm Austin. I'm the Con Kid. And I have no drink since, you know, I'm underage kid.
Good for you. if you haven't had a chance to check out some of the Con Kid posts and webisodes that we have up, those are really cool. Austin's did a good job of putting those together. They've been reviewing everything from, gosh, Austin, you guys have done most of the Marvel shows, haven't you?
Yeah, we kind of slowed down just, you know, summer happened and just stuff like that.
Yep. So.
Austin decided to become a bodybuilder.
The last time I said Austin's like three times, he's like three times bigger than what I saw him last time. But Cheeseman, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hey there, everyone. I am Cheeseman. I'm one of the founding members of the Con Guy, the Scare Guy. We are in the scare season, and check out theconguy.com where we have all these platforms listed.
All right. And fresh from a crazy time in the desert from Wasteland. I'm so glad Ben's here tonight because Ben is
an expert. You don't look very sandy.
No, because Ben knows more about these movies than most of us here. So I'm so glad Ben is here with us tonight. Why don't you go ahead and introduce
yourself. I took a shower, Luke. I took a shower, Chief.
All right. Hey,
Yes. Hi, everybody. It's me, old buddy Ben, Ben Cleaver, actor, comedian, writer here in L.A., an old school member of the Con Guy, but not a founding member. So, but I've been here for a hot minute, so. Blood good!
All right. Also, Andy, it's good to see you, Andy, and Jonathan Wilkinson. Hey, cool to see you, Jonathan. We're going to see you in a couple of weeks, so I'm really excited about that. So, guys, tonight we are talking about something that's perhaps more than most of you youngins here on the panel tonight. Something very near and dear to my heart. It's a special episode where we discuss what many people consider to be the best, one of the best, right at the top of the summer film seasons ever, because it has produced so many iconic films. And it wasn't just a good summer where you're like, oh, we have a couple cool, good films in the summer. We start listing these films. These are films that, here we are 40 years later, we're celebrating the 40th anniversary of the summer of 82. And all these films, we mention them and everybody still talks about them. Everybody still watches them. Some of us may not have even seen yet. For shame, for shame, for shame. But we are going to jump right into, I just have to ask, is there anyone here besides me that was alive in 1982?
No.
Dang it, I'm so freaking old.
You've just got a lot of much younger.
What's 1982?
Oh, 1982.
Okay, Austin wasn't even alive in 1992.
Nope. His mom was alive, and his dad.
That was like 15 years ago.
92.
His mom was 1 year old.
Years ago, Danae.
Hello, Lily. Lily was alive. Me and Lily share a very fond love of all things Charlie Brown and Snoopy. So we have bonded over that recently. I love the stuff that she's been posting. So I'm a Charlie Brown and Snoopy guy. All right, let's jump into this because we do have a few films to get through, guys. But I do have to ask Ben. Hey, Ben, how was the desert?
Oh, man, it was the best one yet. It was so much fun. I love Wasteland Weekend. I dream about it during the year. And to get to spend four and a half days out there in the desert, it was just an absolute blast. Jim, you've got to come along next year.
I wanted to so bad. I got my weekends even mixed up. I thought it was Labor Day weekend for some reason. So, I got to pay attention. All right. And just to let you guys know, we do realize that this week is a big, if it depends on when you're listening to the podcast here, watching the podcast. For those of you who are watching it live or watching it the week of October 3, darn, rent's due. Please know that Katie is going to drop a cool video talking us through some of the highlights coming up this week at one of the biggest Comic-Con conventions. Katie, which one is that?
New York Comic-Con. Yeah. New York Comic-Con is back in person this year. It is happening this Thursday. So I will be posting on both of, at least two of the channels, probably the Con Guy and the Con Girls. So if you are going to New York Comic-Con or interested in going to New York Comic-Con, if you don't have tickets yet, I'll explain where you can find them, all that jazz. So just kind of follow us on the socials if you guys want to hear more updates. I'm going to try to post those more regularly as content on our socials. So definitely follow those if you want to keep updated.
Very cool. And we are going to jump into the first movie. The thing is, we are calling this the summer of 82 because every movie we're talking about tonight was released during that summer. There were some other movies that were released that year that were kind of not in the summer, so those are special mentions. We'll mention them towards the end of the show. But the movies that we are about to talk about, they were all released during the summer of 1982. And our very good friend, the Con Kid, Austin, is here because our very first film that we're going to talk about is a film that he has a little bit of fondness for. It's called Conan the Barbarian, released in 1982. Austin, why don't you tell me why this film has a special place for you?
Yeah, no, I love Arnold. I love everything he's done. I love everything he's doing. It's really cool. It's a great story. I love his life story and stuff, how he came from Austria and created a name for himself. You know, conquered bodybuilding, conquered, you know, Hollywood, then conquered politics. But I like what he did in this film just because it's one of his first ones and got him on the map.
So. I think this is the first time we saw Arnold on film in a major motion picture, isn't it? Yeah.
A major motion picture.
No, he did other films.
and things, but this really kind of broke him out as, you know, like Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he became
where those other films
kind of that icon.
He did that Hercules in New York thing where they dubbed in somebody else's voice.
Yeah. At first.
Yeah, he was allowed to use his own voice after this movie.
Right.
So we're going in chronological order of when the films were released. Conan the Barbarian was released May 14th of 1982. It is it's an epic sword and sorcery film directed by John Milius and written, this blew me away, I didn't realize this, by John Milius and Oliver Stone. Oliver Stone was one of the writers on this. It's based on Robert E. Howard's Conan. I used to subscribe. Yeah, I had a comic book subscription, and Conan was one of the books that I used to collect. This film stars Arnold Schwarzenegger and another big name, James Earl Jones. Not just the voice of James Earl Jones, but he is a badassness. It's the story of a barbarian warrior named Conan, who is Schwarzenegger, who seeks vengeance for the death of his parents at the hands of Thulsa Doom, who is Jones, who is the leader of a snake cult. Ben, have you seen this movie?
I have to admit, this one is my one blind spot on this whole list. Oh, I've never
seen it. No worries, no worries. Me and Austin have seen it. Hey, Luke, have you seen it?
The funny thing is, kind of like Ben, like I'm a big Arnold fan, but for some reason, I never really watched this film. But when I was in Ohio recently, Austin, of all people, introduced me to that. Although I introduced him to Terminator 2, so I will take credit for that. But Austin introduced me to Conan, saw for the first time. Yeah, as a screenwriter and, you know, like filmmaker, like it didn't always like age well, like in the best ways, some of it, like seeing it with fresh eyes. But like if you saw it when you're younger as a kid, I feel, and at the time, I feel like it would have been very big and iconic. I mean, it's a big movie. I mean, there's a lot of scenic things, a lot of like casting, and just the iconic feel of it is pretty cool. And I mean, there's definitely a lot of cool scenes, but then there's a lot of like little cheesy stuff you probably wouldn't see if it was written today. And I know they did remake it, which I didn't unfortunately see that one either, but with
Jason Momoa. Yeah.
But I don't know. I definitely need more watches to kind of get more of a feel of, you know, the story, the other things, but it was cool seeing Arnold in it. I mean, I grew up loving Arnold Schwarzenegger and his movies as well. So I'm glad I finally got to see it, and I'd like to see this one again and then see the sequel. But I heard the sequel's not as good, right, Austin? Is that what you told me?
No, it's not.
Austin, tell us about this film a little bit. Why do you think this film is a standout here?
What do you mean by standout? Like, in what terms?
I mean, what about this film makes it stand out? Like, what about this
like
film?
What appeals to you about it that I know you said you like Arnold's story, but about the movie in general?
I mean, I think it's pretty cool. Like, movies before that, like, they didn't really have many, I don't want to say muscular, but, like, fit heroes. Like, if you look at films before. But then once Arnold came onto the scene with this movie and his future movies, that's when actors, like, you know, what's his face? Rocky.
Sylvester Stallone. Also on the list tonight, by the way. Yeah.
All these muscular people started coming in being the heroes. So I like how like this movie kind of transformed the hero look into, you know, what it's kind of been taken over today by like Jason Momoa and The Rock.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. And Austin, you're pretty heavy into bodybuilding these days, right? You're getting ready to compete and everything.
I wouldn't say I'm heavy. I'm definitely being humped. Like, yeah, no, I'm trying to do a competition, but I mean, I'm training for it, but I'm nowhere near the size of.
Well, I want to ask you though, like, in the world of bodybuilding, is Arnold Schwarzenegger still seen as like this epitome of what people want to be like?
Yeah, for the most part, like, for most people, it's, you know, you got Arnold as the old, like, he's the guy you want to be, but now you got, you know, guys nowadays like what's his face, Sebum. Coming up, Chris Bumstead.
Mm-hmm.
So people are making the comparisons there, but Arnold's always Arnold.
And tell us, have you met Arnold Schwarzenegger or been in the same room with him?
Yeah, no, I definitely have. It was an awesome. I went to the Arnold Classic. I got to rip out the hat right there.
Wait, let me make that.
Cool, man. I was wondering about that.
Let me make that. Okay, let's look at that large. That's cool. It was in Columbus, Ohio?
Yeah, so it was in Columbus, Ohio. Arnold did a competition back in the olden days, you know, back when, you know, Jim still thought he was young.
I was young at one time.
Well, yeah. Were you still young in the 80s? No, just kidding.
Yeah, so he did a competition back then, and then he really liked the way it was organized, and that's when he, you know, decided after his, you know, bodybuilding career to partner up, and that's when the Arnold Classic came about. And it's like one of the biggest bodybuilding, like, expos there is.
Yeah.
So what's cool about it is that I went there, and I don't want to call out names by any means, but I was able to get real close to Arnold in that whole scene, and it was really cool.
That's cool.
He has
that's
other cool. uncles. That's what he'll say.
Yeah, I got within like 6 inches of him. I got so scared. I was like, oh, great. I'm going to get tackled.
What? Luke, were you there when this happened?
No, but I saw photos and videos of, well, not necessarily of the Arnold ones, because it was pretty locked down with Arnold, you said, right?
Yeah, no, Arnold's locked down.
It's cool that he's still such a big name. Like, I mean, when you think about the last 40 years, that perhaps The Rock, Will Smith, I mean, and Arnold Schwarzenegger, they're up there. Those are like the guys that are still, they're still draws to this day. So Arnold,
were a big part of Planet Hollywood back in the day, then they were part of that group you're talking about, Jim. The Bruce Willis's, yeah. Sylvester Stallone, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Planet Hollywood.
Demi
back
Moore.
The day. Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Demi Moore. Yeah.
But like, the thing is cool. Arnold Schwarzenegger, he won Mr. Olympiad in 1975. And that's kind of what propelled him to this. And he.
Oh, no, he won way more than that.
No, I mean, he won it in 1975. Isn't that when he won Mr. Olympiad? I think.
He won Mr. Olympiad. What is it? 1970, 71, 72, 73, 74, and 75.
Oh, wow.
And. 1980. Sorry. So he's won it seven times.
Oh, so he kept on competing.
Young then.
So he kept competing. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So he ended competing in 1975, and then he took off for like 5 years. But when Conan took forever to like get going, he rejoined and basically did it again and won. But he was significantly smaller since the people on Conan wanted him to be more close to the size of other actors.
Yeah. But what's interesting though, like when Arnold Schwarzenegger took the role, I remember because I had never heard of him. I was a little kid. I was young. I was a little kid, but because I read the comic books, the Conan comic books, and he was perfect for the part. Like he looked the part. He was built because like it was going to be hard to get that part. And we can't spend a lot more time on this, but. The thing about it, like this movie, I had it written down here during for its day because it came out strong, and back in the day, it worldwide it made almost $69 million, you know, on a really small budget, and James Earl Jones was added last minute because he had conflicts on Broadway. It's kind of weird, he had conflicts on Broadway, but he decided to come and play the big bad to Arnold Schwarzenegger, and for those of you who haven't seen it, like. I don't want to ruin the movie, but there is a scene when James Earl Jones turns into this gigantic snake that is pretty amazing. And one of the funny things is Arnold, they were actually shooting bows and arrows right over his head, real bows and arrows. Back then, they weren't quite as safe. But I just think it's great. I just love to hear about stories about the filmmaking. 80s,
everybody was on cocaine.
Anyways, Conan the Barbarian came out May 14th.
Fire arrows at him.
It launched perhaps one of the biggest superstars of our era, Arnold Schwarzenegger, who is still, it's kind of hard to imagine a bigger name to this day. So Conan the Barbarian, May 14th. Anybody else have anything to say about that before we move on?
Nope, let's move on.
Yeah, I was going to say, cool. We need to move on. This point.
And Austin, you are welcome to stay on as long as you want, but why don't you stay on through one more, because we're talking about actors who are big and muscular. Our next one, May 28th, our next film we're celebrating, Rocky III. And does anybody know why this Rocky is particularly iconic?
It's the
Mr.
One with
T.
Mr. T, right?
Yes.
I pity the fool who doesn't know that.
Is this the one where he's boxing?
No, that's the other one.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Now, this is the very first appearance of Mr. T on film. And first time we ever heard him say his I. Do you guys know what Mr. T's iconic phrase is?
I pity the fool.
I pity the fool.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is the first time he ever said it was in Rocky III. Cheeseman, do you have a picture you want to share?
I do.
Okay, let's see.
Is this guy?
Yes.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, I was in Hollywood before. Jim was there as well. Jim took the picture. And we randomly were sitting there, and then Mr. T sat down at a kebab place and was just, you know, talking and having just... And I was like, I got to talk to Mr. T. So I went up, talked to him for a second and got a picture. But yeah, Mr. T, and he's been a big part of, you know, the con kind of, you know, world. And like has attended Comic Cons, has comics and also a TV show. And did he have a TV show? He had some TV shows back in the day. But
the A-Team. He was on the A-Team.
Didn't he have a cartoon as well at one point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was on Adult Swim.
Yeah, but Mike Tyson had something as well. Did they both? I don't know if
Mr. T had something.
Mr. T had something on Adult Swim.
But look, what was interesting is like Mr. T, like for those of you, he is not this ferocious bang him up kind of guy. When we talked to him there, what was he like?
I mean, he's a preacher man kind of thing. Like, he's a strong Christian. And as you can see here again on this picture, I mean, he's wearing like a Lord's gym is basically, he's like a gym shirt that says Lord's gym on it.
Yeah. And those of you that might not be able to see it, like it's a drawing of Jesus, like he's doing pushups with the cross on his back and it says the sins of the world on the cross. Yeah. So, yeah.
But yeah, he's a gentle giant.
Once or twice, and it's very interesting.
What's that, Derek?
I have seen Mr. T preach on TV, which is very interesting. That. Yeah.
Well, he's still like, let's be honest, you know, just like the quote from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, he may be a lion, but he's not a tame lion. Mr. T may be preacher man, but he's crazy as crazy. You know, he's still talking to him there and having a conversation with him. That was so fun, and he still got it. He's a rough and tumble guy.
Mr. T. Mr. T. When you meet Mr. T, he is Mr. T. I think that's what you're trying to say.
So Rocky III came out May 23rd. It told the story. It was written, directed, and starring Sylvester Stallone. That's crazy that he did that again. It's a sequel to Rocky II, and it's the third installment in the franchise. Along with Stallone, it also has Talia Shire, Carl Weathers, who was a big part of this one, Burgess Meredith, and Mr. T. And Mr. T's character was called Clubber Lang. He's a powerful new contender, and he turns to his old adversary, Apollo Creed, for training after the death of his manager, we're talking about Rocky, and friend, Mickey. This is Mickey, his manager, died in this one. It was very, very sad. The movie made $125 million in its day, so back in 1982, these are big numbers. And it's kind of cool. This is the only movie in the Rocky series that goes the full 15 rounds, which is kind of cool.
No, the rematch does not go the full 15 rounds. It only lasts three.
Yeah, this is the only one that doesn't go up to 15 rounds, right?
Oh, okay.
He gets beaten the first one, and then he comes back for the rematch at the end of the movie, which in previous Rocky movies and in the other ones as well, it goes to the full what do they call it
going the distance.
Yeah, in the other ones that it goes the distance. In the rematch with Clubber Lang, it only goes three.
That's cool. Did you know that this is a kind of an interesting piece of there's a song called You're the Best Around, Nothing's Ever Gonna. You know that song? Where's that from? Yeah.
From Karate Kid.
It's from Karate Kid, but it was originally written. It was supposed to be in Rocky III, but it didn't make the cut, so they gave it to Karate Kid.
Because of another amazing song.
What was the other amazing song?
Eye of the Tiger.
I don't know. Wait.
Well, that was in the original.
Two conversations. Yeah, but like, yeah, this is the one when Eye of the Tiger came out by the group Survivor. Yeah.
And no, Eye of the Tiger came out with Rocky III.
Oh, my bad.
Yep.
Yeah.
Eye of the Tiger is the very first record back when they sold records that I ever bought in my life. I played that thing over and over and over again, and it was the number one song of the year. I remember that of 1982, Survivor. I saw them in concert, too. That's the only song I really like that they sang, so it was kind of a wasted concert. But
anyways. I have the Rocky story on my Apple Music. This is something that's always fun to run to or exercise to is the Rocky themes. Like, I was a gigantic Rocky fan. Like, my parents and Austin's grandparents, one of their first dates was actually seeing Rocky II. So that was, it's always been a big part of, like, my family's life is watching these movies. And I was a big fan of all of it. And, like, what's great about the Rocky movies is they continue to be good kind of throughout, except for, like, I wasn't a big fan of V. But basically Rocky 1, Rocky 2, Rocky 3, Rocky 4 are like pretty solid. And even like the newer ones have been great too. And Creed has been amazing. But Rocky's done a really good job of making good sequels for the most part. And this one particularly was very iconic. And especially with the song, you know, with the Eye of the Tiger. Like, I'd listened to that before football games. And the soundtrack is such a big thing on the Rocky movies too. Like, I love Rocky. I do love Rocky III. And the fact that, you know, like the first couple movies he faced off against Apollo Creed, but then the guy that ends up helping him is like his nemesis, you know, like Apollo Creed comes and trains him to fight Mr. T and do like, and then win the fight.
Oh, he doesn't just come and train him. He takes Rocky to California to train him there. At his gym.
The running on the beach scene is something we should all be doing. Like, have that pro scene. And
next con guy video, all of us just down at the beach trying to run, and only Derek can make it farther than 100 feet.
I bet you,
Ben, what do you think happened at the end of the movie when they both punched each other at the same time with the still frame? Do you think they both fell down, knocked each other out, or what do you think happened after that? That was kind of like an unsolved mystery.
No, I think the entire Rocky universe just froze at that moment. And then that was actually when Loki was going back to fix the timeline and make sure Rocky V never happened.
Yeah.
I can confirm that.
That sounds like a reasonable
That sounds very accurate.
Yeah.
So that is Rocky III? Rocky III released... May 28th, that's our second film on the list. And it's to this day, it's iconic. I think mainly iconic because of Mr. T. I mean, the Rocky films are pretty amazing. Rocky 1 and 2, I mean, the quality of Rocky 1 and 2 still is way up there. And it's what people need to realize, Sylvester Stallone is not just some dumb actor. He wrote and directed these films, man. This guy has skills. I don't think he directed all of them, but he wrote numbers 1, 2, and 3. What's that?
He can type?
I don't know.
I'm just joking. It's funny hearing you be like, do you know that Sylvester Stallone can actually write and read?
I have mad respect for him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways. Stallone. All right.
Well, our next film. I was talking to somebody the other day. Oh, sorry.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, I was legitimately talking to somebody the other day who was like, I had no idea that Sylvester Stallone wrote Rocky. And I was like, yeah, he totally wrote it.
Did it, and if someone can look this up, it won some Academy Awards, right?
Yeah.
Oh, please. Did it win Best Picture? It was nominated for Best Picture. I know that.
Yeah, it was nominated.
The original, or are we still talking about
Rocky? Ben's going to look that up while we're going to move on to the next one, because the next one we're just going to kind of...
might beat out Jaws.
What do you mean? It wasn't the same year, though.
I think the original film beat out Jaws. I think it was the same year. Wait,
no,
the original
76.
Rocky.
Original Rocky was 76 or 77 or 78. One of those 3 years.
76.
Okay. Maybe it was Gandhi or something like that.
Gandhi was not the year Jaws was out. No.
No. Anyway, yeah, Rocky won Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Film Editing at the Academy Awards. Woo!
There you go, man. There you go, Sylvester Stallone.
And Golden Globe for Best Motion Picture.
Fantastic.
Yeah, but the best director is John G. Avildsen. So
for
Stallone,
what?
I guess, wrote
it. Yes, Sly didn't direct it, but he wrote it.
Okay, yeah.
He wrote the first one, yeah. Yeah. A lot of it was based on his own life, too. So, anyways, the Rocky films to this day, I think they still stand up. And the new ones, the newer Rocky films starring Jordan, Michael B. Jordan. I know. Otherwise, yeah. Those are pretty amazing as well. So if you guys get a chance to check those out. All right.
The Creed films are awesome.
Aren't they great?
They are.
Those are
I love them.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah. All right. June 4th, our next film, which we are going to just skim by because we have already done a full episode on this one. Poltergeist, which had a domestic take of $77 million. It was, I'm just going to throw this up just for the heck of it because I have it here. The 40th anniversary of Poltergeist is one of the most iconic horror movies, I mean, haunted house movies of all time, because it was the movie that introduced the idea of a haunted house being a roller coaster ride. It was amazing. Steven Spielberg was reputed to have been the ghost director on this, you know, with Toby Hooper. Ben, is it Toby Hooper or Tobe Hooper? How do you say the director of Chainsaw, Tobe Hooper? I think it's Tobe.
I've always said Tobe, but honestly, I don't know for sure.
Maybe it's
right,
Tobey.
Right.
But for those of you who did not see our one-hour episode when we were extolling the virtues of this iconic film, Derek and Danae were both on with me. Guys, real quick, why does this movie stand out? Why is this iconic?
Well, like you said, it's a roller coaster ride rather than a slow burn. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Exactly. And also just like that supposed curse that people have. Who's gonna talk, Derek?
Danae.
There's a supposed curse around it, which I don't know that is necessarily true, but that has sold a lot. Also, it's just Steven Spielberg. I mean, his movies hold up for a reason. And that reason is that they're awesome, and he is one of the best directors ever, if not the best. And yes, he ghost directed this. He also had a big hand in writing it, and I think it's just the quality stories last in popularity. Derek, you may go. Have a seat at the floor.
Thank you for your permission. There was a delay there, so I like was starting when it was silent, and then like your sound came through late, just so you know.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. Not your fault. Thank you. But yeah, this movie, like we talked about this when we talked about it before, but how like it's also just got that emotional weight to it because we all really connect with the family and with the kids, and you know, the things that scare the children in the movie are things that we all would find scary as kids, and things that I think Steven Spielberg pulled from his own childhood. And all of that makes it really stay with you in a lot of ways.
Yep. Fantastic film. I went out there and I filmed for our, if you guys get a chance, check out our 1 hour episode about Poltergeist, where we have some footage of the film today. I mean, the exterior of the house and how it looks today in the neighborhood is really cool. All right. That very same weekend that Poltergeist debuted, another film came out, which is so close to us, our hearts here at the Con Guy. Wrath of Khan. Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan came out. With the assistance of the Enterprise crew, Admiral Kirk must stop an old nemesis, Khan, from using the life-generating Genesis device as the ultimate weapon. This movie came out. And we had Tom Parham on with us to discuss this movie. And this is kind of regarded as the movie that saved the Star Trek universe. Ben, you weren't on with us with this episode. I'd love to know your thoughts about Star Trek II.
Wrath of Khan is just like, okay, so you look at Star Trek, the motion picture. It's like, fine, right? Like, not...
Yeah,
it's pretty forgettable as a movie. You think you had this successful franchise or whatever. Now, remember, Star Trek was not necessarily the same Star Trek we have now when the motion picture came out. You know, it had three seasons in the 60s, and then they come out with a motion picture. It's kind of meh. They do this movie, The Wrath of Khan, based off of a character they introduced in season one of the series. But it's just so well written. It's so well done. And it exactly what you said, it launches this franchise of what Star Trek is as we know it now, which is then launched more movies, The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Discovery, Enterprise, you know, all these, the Strange New Worlds, which is some of the best Trek I've seen in the last 20 years.
It
all goes back to the Wrath of Khan success. You know, it probably didn't seem like a watershed moment at the time, but it became that. You know, they and there was a lot going into it, as I recall, with just making sure that, you know, you're bringing back this character from the show. They wanted to make it somebody who was going to be a real, to coin a term, nemesis to the crew of the Enterprise. and really, because again, Star Trek the Motion Picture was pretty forgettable. So, you know, yeah. It made enough money because there were enough people that wanted to go see it, but they knew that they really needed to have something special with the sequel. But I don't think they realized they were going to have what they had. And I need to go back and watch it again this week because it's so good, and it's been a minute since I've watched it.
It's so amazing. And like when Tom Parham was on with us, and Derek, you were on as well. And just real quick, if you guys haven't had a chance, we really dove in deep to talking about Star Trek II with you and Tom. And Tom, Derek, if you can just like leave us with maybe final thoughts on Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. What is it about this film that is the secret sauce that has made it a 40-year like something that people go back to over and over and over again?
Well, with the caveat that I don't think you can ever really point to the one thing that makes a movie truly great and memorable. It's lots of times just all sorts of things really done well coming together in a kind of magic that everybody wants to capture when they're making a film. And it's only those rare occasions where they actually do. And this one, it hits so many things right. You've got a lot of characters that you relate to thematically. It speaks to these ideas of aging and of death, and it juxtaposes how different characters think about those things, and how, you know, ultimately the way, like how we face death in many ways defines us. And it sets that up at the very beginning with the Kobayashi Maru, when you learn so much about Kirk, but finding out, oh, he cheated it because he refused to face an unwinnable scenario. And then within the movie, he eventually does.
Whoops.
Uh-oh. That didn't just happen on my end.
Nope, it's your...
God!
See, you know, the very logical moment.
Oh, there we go.
We're sorry, Derek. You froze up right there.
Yeah, you froze.
I apologize.
Yeah, I lost everybody for a second. I'd say that's part of what I say is great about it is really thematically what the issues it deals with, but deals with it in a very human way because we care about Spock. We care about Kirk. We care about the story with Khan. And it's so fascinating because he was a character that you would not have thought to think about again. But then they brought him back and he has been dwelling on Kirk this whole time. Which is part of why the whole reboot, the trilogy, did not work for them to bring Khan back, because it's completely different now. So all those things.
I didn't enjoy that movie, though. I will say that.
It was entertaining to watch in the theater, but they should have gone with a different villain. I'll at least say that. So there are so many different factors that come together. They're handled really well. The writing is... the story is almost kind of this Shakespearean revenge, good versus evil tale in a way, that also deals with these big issues. And it's also like, there's also the whimsical nature to it where we see Kirk and Bones and Spock interacting, and it's fun to watch too. And when you can get all of those things together, like have it be really meaningful, have the characters be compelling where we care about them, and also just have it be fun and entertaining and surprising at the same time, like... I could really go on and you could talk about Aristotle's Poetics and all the different elements of drama. But I think it's a movie that hits them all, and that's why we love it.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah. Luke, to answer your question, I do concur. I think it was fun to see Banana Cucumber Patch playing Khan, but really there was no real backstory for that character in the Kelvin timeline.
Like, maybe he should have just been a different villain, you know.
Yeah.
Played that way, you know, just don't call him Khan.
Right. It was the worst kept secret of the movie ever.
Yes.
You know, oh, it's Khan. Big surprise. Everybody knew who that was going to be. Anyways, it made almost $80 million, which was a big sum in 1982. We are saying that 1982. we're not going to adjust for inflation. Movies today routinely break $100 million. It's to be expected. But back in the day, back when I was a wee lad, $80 million was a huge sum of money. All right, that was June 4th. 1 week later, and we are not going to spend tons of time on this movie, but we would be sinning against humanity not to mention the fact that 1 week later, this little fellow, E.T., the extraterrestrial, made his landing here on this planet. E.T., the extraterrestrial, is a 1982 American science fiction movie written by Melissa Matheson and directed by Steven Spielberg, about a little alien who gets left behind. All right, guys, we got to talk about it for just a moment. Katie, I would love to know from you, what about E.T. do you love, and why is it such a classic?
I mean, I think E.T. was probably one of the first, like, alien films I remember watching as a child. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to, like, rack my brain and remember the first one that I watched. But, I mean, it's a family-friendly movie that you can watch with an alien. I mean, it's just charming. I feel like that it's timeless in the sense that families now can still watch it and enjoy it and know that they're going to get a good movie out of it. And, I mean, you know, it also... Drew Barrymore. We see Drew Barrymore break out in this film, and you know, she is who she is today. But I do have a question for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Do you consider E.T. a horror film or just sci-fi?
No, it's sci-fi.
Yeah,
sci-fi. That's
what I think. What's interesting though with that is like when you see like shirt companies and stuff, like, so Roosevelt's is a shirt I've been buying, you know, different things that make these really cool colored shirts, but they'll put E.T. within the Halloween or kind of horror kind of category in a way, which is...
Let's see your shirt, Luke. Your
point, Katie. This is a Stranger Things version of the E.T. mood.
I like it.
Very nice.
But to Katie's point, what, Luke?
He's kind of...
I was just
on the
saying
point,
that, like...
Katie. Oh, yeah, sorry. Talking over each other, sorry, but like I think it just people automatically assume that horror is like out of body, making you jump, scary, but then at the same time I guess it's kind of like a subgenre, which would be it's not quite like just sci-fi, but there's aliens, so we're gonna lump it together with horror even though it's not a scary movie.
No, there's I agree, Katie. Yeah, it was Halloween, but guys, think about though before we meet E.T., it is a scary film when Elliot is sitting out on that with the cornfield behind him, the fog and the smoke, and there's something creeping in. It's kind of freaking creepy, and Steven Spielberg pulled out all the stops to make that a scary experience. We even found the footsteps where they thought it was the coyotes were back, but it was E.T. And even when he's going, one of the scariest scenes is when he's in the cornfield and he's looking for E.T. and he comes across him and E.T. screams, "Ah!" That was so cool.
And I mean, the score always contributes to the emotion of the film in all these movies. Is there's a reason why their soundtracks are iconic, because they add so much to, you know, what they lacked in maybe special effects or CGI back then, they made up for with music.
And that's what Andy just said. Yeah, he's listening to the soundtrack.
Yeah.
That iconic John Williams score. I agree with you.
Yeah, that kind of 10 or 15 minutes of that movie is just remarkable. And to see that, like, if you are able to be in the Los Angeles area, like, when John Williams does his, you know, several day composing kind of thing. He doesn't do the same thing every year. They switch it up, but we were lucky enough to see the end of E.T. played along with a live orchestra conducted by John Williams. And
Luke's talking about the John Williams at the Hollywood Bowl.
Yeah.
The Hollywood Bowl. Yeah.
And let's be honest, guys, he did it this year at age 90, and he can do it for as long as he wants, but I think if people want to go see John Williams at the Hollywood Bowl, you know, make sure you – it's one of those things. Do not wait. Do not wait. Make sure you do. Hey, let's say hello to a couple people real quick. Lily says, "Hey, Jim, we're not old. We are wise." I feel older than I do wise, Lily. I'm so sorry. And is this really true? Is Mike Dunn on there saying hello?
Hey, pig. Actually, no, he's saying, hey, pig. We all call each other pigs.
A.K.A. Evan Frere. And then okay. Look at this. Eric Brown. Hey, boys and girls. Good to see you, Eric. And then Luke, Mrs. Betsy Cheeseman, Taylor Cheeseman. Luke will know what this means. Debo, what's that, Luke?
So I play fantasy football, and tonight I was playing Austin, the con kid, on here. And basically I was winning, and there was one player that was the deciding factor of if I'd win or not, and it was Debo Samuel on San Francisco 49ers, and he had a pretty good game, and I lost to Austin. Thought I had this locked down, but then Debo ruined it. So,
all right. So
my
by
mom's
the way,
ruining he- it, rubbing it in. For Austin, I guess.
So, by the way, just to talk about the influence of ET, you know, $800 million worldwide. It passed up Star Wars to become the biggest motion picture of all time up to that point. Of course, it was passed up about 11 years later by another Spielberg film, Jurassic Park, in 1993. Here's what's cool. I was reading back in the day, films used to be in movie theaters for quite some time. It opened at number one. It was number one for like 6 weeks, and then it was either number one or number two for a number of weeks, and then it returned back to number one in December, and it kind of set the record for being number one for 16 weeks total throughout that year. It was playing throughout the entire year, and I do remember as a kid, the next summer, a lot of the drive-in movie theaters, yes, we had drive-in movie theaters back then that were not porn theaters. Back then, it was still playing the next summer. All right. So that was E.T., which came out June 11th, our next film. Ben, I'm going to ask you about this one. June 25th, there is a film that came out, perhaps was not the biggest financial film of the summer, but you'd be hard-pressed to say this film did not have quite as much of an influence as all these other films. You know what film this is?
In the dystopian future of Los Angeles, 2019.
Blade Runner!
2019? Is that what it was?
Blade Runner, it's set in 2019.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's what it says.
I mean, if they knew COVID was coming, they could have thrown that in there, you know? Year before COVID.
Yes, synthetic humans known as replicants are bioengineered by the powerful Tyrell Corporation to work on space colonies when a fugitive group of advanced replicants led by Roy Beatty, Howard, escapes back. Howard? It just has the name there. Like, the last name. I'm just reading the thing. Sorry. Escapes back to Earth. Burnout cop Rick Deckard, Harrison Ford, reluctantly agrees to hunt them down. It became a cult film and has since come to be regarded as one of the all-time best sci-fi films, hailed for its production design depicting a high-tech but decaying future. Blade Runner is often regarded as both a leading example of neo-noir cinema as well as a foundational work of the cyberpunk genre.
Yeah. The fact that it takes place in 2019, isn't that the whole reason why they did the other movie, the sequel?
2049.
Why they had to like go further?
Well, partially because Harrison Ford was 30 years older when they made the second movie.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the sequel.
That film didn't fix anything of being like, oh, well, maybe we're wrong on 2019. You know, like, I mean, it's a movie. It's its own universe. It doesn't, with knowing the multiverse thing, it doesn't necessarily mean it's our universe when you see these things.
Yeah.
So, Ben, I do want to ask you, though, like, what do you think of the film Blade Runner? And why do you think Blade Runner, which is, I mean, I've seen it probably twice, and I like it. It's beautifully shot. It's kind of cool, but why is that film so popular? Why did it become popular? Because I don't think it was so popular when it first came out.
Yeah, it's a long burn, too, the film is. It's a slow burn in a lot of places, but I think part of it is that sci-fi and these kind of style of films leading up to this point just weren't that well done, and all of a sudden Blade Runner comes out and it's a really well done film. It's well written, it's the cinematography is amazing, it's beautiful. I'm not necessarily a historian on the buildup of the cyberpunk slash dystopian future sci-fi films of the late 1970s and early 1980s. But I feel like it really presented it in this way that was a little bit different from like the 60s of the idyllic, you know, future, Jetson style future of having this, 2019, which at that point was nearly 40 years into the future. So, you know, you never know. But this, the darkness, the raining in LA, the very, the whole concept of the replicants and hunting them down and trying to figure out who was a human and who wasn't. And, it was just somewhat of a unique take. But I think the quality of the film is what sets it apart from anything else that was coming out in that vein at that time. Because you've seen late 70s, early 80s sci-fi. There's a bunch of crap out there that's just not, it's not well filmed, it's not well written, it's not well acted. Flash. It's ridiculous. Exactly.
Oh, that is so much fun.
And, you know, Flash Gordon, Flash Gordon is a ton of fun, but
this is a pile of garbage, even though I love watching it.
Oh, yeah. But this was gritty. It was dramatic. Who's the woman who plays the replicant?
I'm not going to know all these details. Let me see. Is it? Do we have? Oh, we don't have her listed here. But the woman who he. What's that?
Yeah. Hold on.
But while Ben looks for that, did you guys know who was? Who almost played the Deckard character before Harrison Ford?
Guess.
It's a character who had another big film come out later this year where he played a
Arnold
woman.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Dustin Hoffman. Yes, Dustin Hoffman was first in line to be play the Blade Runner, which is one of the strangest things that I have heard when we were looking up about this. And the thing about this film that is kind of so contentious for so many people, you know, there's been about like between five to I think seven different versions of this film have been released. The editor's cut, the theatrical cut, the extended cut, that cut, because there's always been so much contention about like, in the beginning, test audiences hated this film. They absolutely hated it. And so the studio went back and said, like, they had a disastrous preview screening. So the producers went back and hired another writer from the Bob Newhart show to write a Norrish voiceover for Deckard that they went back and added in to help audiences understand the movie. However, back when the final cut, I mean, it was added in the director's cut, in Blade Runner 1992 director's cut release and in 2007's final cut, that voiceover was removed because I guess the purists who really loved this movie just hated that so much.
I think I've only ever seen...
I mean, Jim, I would have seen Rain Man Runner. That would have been fun.
Rain Man Runner.
Dustin Hoffman. Yeah. Blade Runner with Rain Man in it.
Right. What were you saying, Derek?
Definitely a replicant.
Definitely a replicant.
Sean Young is the actress that I was trying to think of. I don't know why I couldn't think of her name.
You should have just said Ray Finkel.
Ray Finkel.
Because they couldn't remember the name.
Yeah.
What's that have to do? I don't get that joke. All right.
Wasn't she Ray Finkel? And Ace Ventura?
So this movie made $41 million, which, you know, it's not a pittance, but apparently the budget was around $30 million. So that doesn't really leave very much room for profit. I think that was worldwide originally. It's been released so many times, I don't know what it ultimately ended up bringing in. But anyways, I remember as a kid, this movie came out in 82, which was right after, when did Empire Strikes Back come out? Was that 81?
No, Empire Strikes Back came out in 80.
80, that's right. And so Han Solo was frozen in carbonite, and we didn't get him out until 83. And as a kid, I was so upset that Han Solo was doing another movie when he should have been doing Star Wars. I remember as a kid saying, wait, what's this other science fiction movie he's in? Come on, let's get Star Wars going. And I remember I was also appalled because when I was a little kid, I wasn't allowed to watch R-rated movies. And what? Han Solo's in an R-rated movie? I was probably saying naughty words. It was great. Anyways, we're going to move on. Unless anyone else has any accolades.
Come on, Jim, you could have seen PG-13.
No, we're moving on.
Like, we got to move
on. Okay. All right, so our next film we're not going to talk about tonight, but we are going to mention it. It came out June 25th, John Carpenter's The Thing. It only made like $20 million worldwide, and it was considered kind of a financial flop. But here we are 40 years later. It's kind of considered, I'm just going to at least show it here. It's considered one of the best examples of practical effects ever filmed. And we are going to talk about this movie and another film on our list in a special Scare Guy episode where we're going to talk about a couple of the films on this list. All right. So
I can say something real quick, though.
Go ahead.
I haven't seen a lot of these movies, but I remember my dad watching The Thing when I was a small child, and I have never attempted to watch it again. Like, terrified me. Like, I have never had the desire to be like, yeah, let me check this movie out again. So.
Well, this picture we have on screen, do you guys know what
you're watching it?
What's up?
Were you eating while you were watching it? Did that ruin it for you?
I don't know. I just remember I was a tiny young person and just was terrified.
Well, let's be honest. It was one of the most disgustingly gross movies ever made. Like this scene we're looking at, right? We're seeing a picture of lead character here with, it looks like a spider crawling up behind him. But Ben or whoever has seen this movie, what is it that we're looking at?
A thing, Jim.
That is somebody's
thing that used to be a person.
It was somebody's
head
that was ripped off their body. It kind of like slowly rents from their body and it grew legs and walked around. Katie, I agree with you. It's a pretty visually traumatic movie, but we're going to talk about it a little bit more on the Scare Guy.
Yeah, and as a child, though, like I feel like the things that scared you as a child, there's one of two ways it goes. And one of them is never want to watch it again. And the other is, but maybe it won't be as scary because I'm an adult.
So John Carpenter's The Thing came out June 25th that summer. A worldwide gross of $20 million. A research team in Antarctica is hunted by a shape-shifting alien that assumes the appearance of its victims. A sequel of sorts came out. Or a prequel of sorts came out recently, and it wasn't half bad, I don't think. All right, so moving on, that was July 9th, a kind of a groundbreaking film came out. A computer hacker is abducted into the digital world and forced to participate in gladiatorial games where his only chance of escape is with the help of a heroic security program. Of course, we were talking about Walt Disney's 1982 film, Tron.
Let me get right. I fight for the users.
Yeah. Talk about this film. Why is this film? And I think this one is a little bit easier to talk about why, but like, why is this film considered iconic? Anybody?
The visual
on their own. Wow. Yeah.
Like, I mean, you look back at this, and I think there's a feature on Disney Plus. I think it's what's the show where he goes around and tries to find props from old movies and TV shows? It's on Disney Plus. I can't remember.
What's it called?
But he does an episode about Tron and goes back and talks to, you know, the prop makers and people who have stuff from Tron. But it was such visually unique film and a really interesting concept, because of course this is when computers are starting to get big. This is when people start getting computers in their homes, the early 80s. Computer games, which is a big part of Tron, start becoming popular at this time as well. You know, they've been ramping up for the last, you know, little less than a decade probably, but now it's starting to become more accessible to the general public. So to have a story about this computer hacker, the newest, coolest thing, computers, getting sucked into essentially video game, and then you have these visuals with these incredible costumes and like what would a world inside of a computer look like? A thing that I feel like Tron Legacy, which came out, what, 25-ish years later?
I think it's 20. Yeah, I think it's, I think it came out in 2010.
Okay. 2010, so yeah, about 20.
Before Deepfake did it better.
28 years later, what'd you say?
Before Deepfake did it better.
Oh,
have you
right.
seen like side by side comparisons where they do the de-aging stuff and then like now the technology is much better?
Oh yeah, it's way better now. But I think visually, first of all, I think Tron Legacy is very underappreciated. Yeah. But what we went and saw with Tron Legacy is what we were all imagining in our heads when we watched Tron. If you catch my drift, like the way they were able to present it in Legacy is what we were all imagining while we were watching the original. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was, you know, it sparked the imagination. Whoops, I bumped my camera. It sparked the imagination in that way. And I think watching the movie with the visual effects actually inspires your imagination to go along with it a lot more because, like I said, when I saw Tron Legacy, I was like, yes, that's what I saw inside my head when I was watching the first Tron.
Yeah.
Just the darker darks and the neon or neons.
The neon in Legacy. Yeah, I mean, great. It was, I didn't see Tron until right before Legacy came out because I did want to see the original to compare it in that sense. And I am glad that I watched the original Tron because you were able to realize like, this is where we were at this time, the technology, and then now we get to see how many, all these years later, how it can change and how that can add to the story. And, you know, I know a lot of people, like Ben said, like, don't like it, but I'm like, visually, I don't know how you could not like it.
Is it considered, you know, like, cyberpunk as well? Because it's like, we're talking about Blade Runner, but does this... This almost seems a little bit like there might be a slight cyberpunk aesthetic with the, you know, the darker color and the high contrast.
I'd say with the color and like the overall look, like with the neon and everything like that, that is a very cyberpunk-esque type.
It's interesting. Tron, the original 82, does have a 72% score on Rotten Tomatoes. The new one, Tron Legacy, has a 51%. Interesting. I do like Garrett Hedlund. I think he's a great actor.
Wasn't the original Tron excluded from the awards that year because it used CGI?
Yes.
At least for visual effects. Yeah. I don't know that it would have been on
there. Every film uses now.
Yeah. That was considered cheating.
Interesting. Considered
cheating. That's amazing.
That's so interesting. The thing that's so cool about this. How many of you have ever seen the original video game of Pong? Have you ever heard of Pong?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like I have.
Heard of it. Have you kids ever heard of Elvis?
We didn't.
Yeah.
Okay, we didn't I'm play like, it I'm as a teenager,
the right game, though. Right? Yeah. Thanks, Ben. That helped. Yeah. I have seen the original. Yes.
Yep. Two white lines go up and down, and they're hitting a, they're ponging a ball back and forth. Anyways, that was the inspiration.
That's great.
No, Luke should have held up one hand. Derek should have held up one hand, and Ben's head is ponging between the two. But anyways, that
there you go, Derek.
Yeah. Game, which I loved. That game, which I loved, was the inspiration to the director for how he came up with the idea of Tron. Tron was the inspiration for Tron occurred in 1976 when Steven Lisberger, then an animator of drawings with his own studio, looked at a sample reel from a computer firm called Maggie and saw Pong, P-O-N-G, for the first time. It's one of the very first video games. And before you ask, yes, we had it at our place. We had Pong. We thought we were hot crap because we had a video game called Pong.
Hot anyways, crap. We've got Pong.
I think
also. Go ahead, Katie.
Jim at Christmas opening up. Pong!
I was going to say, I think one of the biggest things that people need to think about, like, who are watching these movies 40 years later, is you have to have an understanding of where films were at technology wise and where they were at with their special effects. Because if you're just being like, oh, the special effects were terrible, well, for their time, they were not.
Mm-hmm.
They were high tech for that time. And it's almost like watch Tron with like the this is the 8-bit version of Tron Legacy when the design is going, like now in today's standards. I'm using 100%. Some GameSpeak there because it's appropriate for this. But yeah, like, and I feel like that's one thing that some people, even we do it, like when we see remakes, we think, oh, it can't compare to the original. But in what ways is it better? In what ways is it not better? And I think that that's the lens that not everybody looks at. So.
It wouldn't be interesting if they went in and kind of redid some of the special effects. But the thing I admire about Disney, and as someone who's like worked with them as a client, which I can say, is that they view themselves also as a technology company. So like their effects and the things that they do as a company and the innovative ways of what they were doing back then, which, you know, now seems dated, but was groundbreaking back then. They've always seen themselves as, you know, risk takers and when it comes to technology, and that definitely was something that led to like more things, and even, you know, the style that led to the future one where they did it the way Ben said, like he imagined in his mind.
Tron was a big risk. Disney swung for the fences then. Early 80s were not what you'd call kind to the Disney company as far as their films. They had like in 79, they had a movie called The Black Hole, which to this day I love, just because it's a beautiful film. But then you watch it as an adult. I think they're going to redo that one then. They had a movie called The Watcher in the Woods. Creepy film. And then they had this film, Tron. Tron was probably the best of the three. I hope they redo Black Hole. I really love that one. But this one.
That was their. Tron. They were trying to compete with Star Wars with the Black Hole.
Yes. Yep.
They don't compete with Star Wars anymore.
Okay, we can do this one. Okay, I just want to I was previewing it. I'm not sure if Ben remembers. This is Jonathan Wilkinson, but I had a roommate, Kristen, who met the prop maker for Tron Legacy. He would come over with light disc all the time. Oh, that's cool. He unfortunately rode his light cycle, his motorcycle, inebriated in 2018, and ended up going. He hit a heart. He had a car. He was in the car, and his bike was under. He also exploded a glass of queso on my oven. I missed that. Did he die? Oh my gosh, this is like, so, Jonathan Wilkinson,
I do remember Kristen though, Jonathan. I do remember Kristen. She's super rad. I haven't talked to her in a long time. I should get back in touch with her.
The one thing I remember about, go ahead, Devin. Sorry.
Go ahead. No.
I remember about the sequel, Tron Legacy. I remember it through the lens of Comic-Con. It was at Comic-Con three times before it ever hit theaters because they just couldn't quite get it there. They kept coming back. And remember they had Flynn's Arcade took over like one of the buildings in downtown San Diego. That was really cool. All right.
They also had it at DCA for a while too.
God rest his soul. That's so sad. So we're at the end of our list. We have one final one. We're going to mention it, but we're not going to dive in deep because our special Scare Guy show will talk about this one. But why in the world is Friday the 13th Part 3, which released on August 13th in 3D, why is it on our list? Anybody?
Because it came out in 1982. It's the first appearance of the hockey mask.
Yes. The first time that the hockey mask.
I
haven't seen the
third one, so I don't know that.
Yeah, a lot of people aren't into these films. These are schlocky films. I love 80s schlock. The Friday the 13th movies are the epitome of schlocky films. They made one per year. And like this movie made, $36 million worldwide. It probably had a budget of $1.2 million. It's still
releasing in theaters, like, again.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so.
I wonder what hockey mask sales did after that, you know, like what that did to hockey masks. Like, I've probably even more than that, you know, people just wanting to do Jason for Halloween or whatever.
Full disclosure, this was my very first Friday the 13th movie that I saw. I saw it, and I got to give a little shout out. I love
like
it
in the theater.
I saw it with my Aunt Eloise, who just passed away this weekend. And we would go over to Aunt Eloise and Uncle Ronnie's house. They had HBO. And sorry, Mom, if you watch this, they would let us watch movies. They knew that Mom and Dad would not let us watch because Aunt Eloise, they were the worst about like knowing what was appropriate for kids. They would just watch it and then be like, oh, don't tell your mom and dad we watched that. But I remember I watched
crazy. My brother-in-law did this. My brother-in-law, like during Christmas, would watch Jason movies. Like their family for some reason would watch like those kind of movies during Christmas, which is such a weird thing. Same kind of thing.
Topher's here. I've never seen one of those Friday the 13th movies or Freddy Krueger movies, but I've been meaning to watch those at some point.
Obviously, he doesn't know how to spell Krueger. Come on, Topher.
So the Freddy Krueger, I believe the entire collection is on HBO Max right now because I didn't click on it, but when I was going through HBO Max, it said the Nightmare on Elm Street collection. So I don't know if it's all on there, but there is at least some of them on there. Because yeah. I myself have not watched all of them, but and I love Friday the 13th, but like I'm a bigger Nightmare on Elm Street fan, obviously I'm gonna be like go watch that. But I do want to watch the third one this year, so maybe I can watch because I've only seen the first one, so I need to watch the second one because it would be cool to see Friday the 13th like this year.
You know what's so cool about this Friday the 13th movie? It made me love the idea of the final girl because these are the movies that really kind of like exemplified that. And I drew a comic book as a kid of a serial killer in my neighborhood killing people, but he was faced down by the final girl who killed him by pushing him into a swimming pool and throwing the radio in and electrocute. And you know, I was like,
wait, did you kill all the people you didn't like, Jim? Is that what you're saying? That you like had nobody. Different people like, oh, I killed the neighbor lady that always yelled at my ball being in her yard.
Oh, Mrs. Jones, I became friends with her. God rest her soul. She's no longer with us, but she was a sweet lady. I'm writing that as a story. But anyways, Friday 13th Part 3, it made $36 million, probably had a $1 million budget. And you want to hear the plot? Jason Voorhees stalks a group of friends who go to spend a weekend at a camp near Crystal Lake. It doesn't get any more clear than that. Wait.
In case anybody's wondering, that's what they're all about, but you know.
He says, that's what happens when you grow up in a time frame of turmoil in the toy box. It's a book to scare Christian parents at the time. No, my parents were the same way. They did not like me watching these films, although I know my dad would sneak off and watch these horror films, and mom was never too pleased with him. But we're not going to talk about this very much. But anyways, that's our 10 films that we are covering today, and we will have a complete list on the website. Real quick, guys. There's some other films I just want to mention because they came out that year, but they're not in the summer, and we're not going to talk about them tonight. But Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, came out that season that year. The Slumber Party Massacre. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, love Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. Obviously, this was a weird situation where they were trying to turn the Halloween franchise into an anthology series. So this has nothing to do with Michael Myers. This has nothing to do with that storyline. But it was still Halloween 3, and it's a completely different storyline. But then Halloween 4, when that came out, it was back to the Michael Myers storyline. So it's kind of a weird offshoot, but really fascinating.
And then the mask just got worse and worse.
Yeah, but like really fascinating early 80s, supernatural kind of thriller horror movie here. That's really cool.
Yeah, I think it's a cool movie. As a standalone film, it's really kind of cool. I saw it once and I was disappointed as a kid because I was a demented kid that loved Michael Myers. But
where's Michael Myers? Where's Michael Myers?
I had the novel. I actually bought the Halloween 3 Season of the Witch novel. I remember the back of it. I remember the description of Halloween. It says, when the shadows get long. I've always loved that description of Halloween, when the shadows get longer. And I've kept that with me. Anyways, I love that movie. The Slumber Party Massacre, which we do have an episode of the Scare Guy show where we interviewed the director of the new Slumber Party Massacre, directed by a woman, because this one, the Slumber Party Massacre is unique because it was directed in 1982 by a woman. And yes, it was exploitive, but she felt that she was able to hold the line because, you know, it was a different era back then. She was able to hold the line against too much exploitation, but it was kind of cool. The director that we talked with, was it last year, Luke, with me, you and Carrie, with were you on with that with us on that one, Katie?
Yeah, I was on with the, like the lingering shower shots that were just
she flipped the script and it was exploitive, of course, like the men just to get back. It was kind of a funny thing. And right, Creepshow came out in 82. It was one of the epitome. Ben, do you remember Creepshow?
It did?
It's yes. A classic. I haven't watched it in forever, but I know Creepshow. It's been a long time since I watched it, though. That needs to go on my list for this year.
And real quick, The Dark Crystal came up that year. We haven't talked about Dark Crystal, but I know there's a lot of people on this show that like it. The Beastmaster, which is kind of an underrated but kind of a cool like sword and sorcery type film. And last two, Fast Times at Ridgemont High. We don't usually talk about stoner comedies here in The Con Guy, but this is Sean Penn at his best.
And then a stoner comedy.
Phoebe Cates, yes.
Holy was the only one like stoned in the movie, you know.
It's regarded as a stoner comedy. It's kind of like an early sex raunch comedy. And then finally, Tootsie, which is perhaps the funniest movie of the year, starring Dustin Hoffman. I'm glad he got this movie and did not get Blade Runner. All right, guys, we have got to wrap up.
But if I had Mad Max 2? Did you see Mad Max 2?
That came out this year?
Yeah, that was almost part of the shirt because I was putting together a collection of the 9 things for the shirt. I don't want to leave out Mad Max 2 because that came out that year, which is a very iconic, like, for Mel Gibson and also for kind of that.
No, Mad Max 2 came out in 81.
Again, kind of almost says cyber.
Look, that came out in 81.
Road Warrior came out in 81.
Wait, what month, though? Oh. I remember there was some kind of controversy. It was released. They had, like, the L.A. and New York premiere, but then it was released widely in 82. I think it was one of those
maybe months. That's it.
Maybe.
So, okay. By the way, this is the shirt Luke's talking about. Let me just stand up real quick. This is the shirt that Luke designed. We were trying to have these ready for Comic-Con this year, but we weren't able to do it. It's and we hope to get these ready, and we will share these. Guys, we're going to wrap up with this last question. Last question, I'm going to throw it to you. 1982 is regarded. Go ahead. Ben.
Luke's right. It was released in Australia in December of 1981, and it was released in the USA in May of 1982.
Hmm. Ooh, wow. That's awesome.
All right.
Yep.
All right. I'm going to throw this question out to the group, and this is our closing question for the night. 1982 is regarded by many people. There's even a documentary coming out. Scott Mance had a panel at Comic-Con where they did some previews of this documentary called 1982, The Best Year Ever for Movies. So if you had to think through your lifetime, is there another year that might stack up as this kind of an iconic year? Another year that in 40 years, we're going to be thinking, wow, that was a year. Is there any other year you guys can think of like this?
Maybe. The weird thing is, it's like I like more of these older kind of movies. Like when I'm thinking of like Back to the Future, Jaws, Jurassic Park. Like, I mean, for me, that was kind of like the first one where I was like in it. Of something I loved, and I'm sure Ben's kind of the same way, but a lot of the stuff I love was like before my time of going to the theaters. But Jurassic Park was kind of the first one that I was actually able to go in the theater. I'm like, and this still sticks in like the top 10 of my favorite times. But as far as the year, it's a little hard because for me to think of, you know, because a lot of the iconic stuff I like was before my time.
What were you saying, Danae?
I was just saying 2001, which we kind of mentioned when we were just chatting about this episode privately, which was, Derek, remind me, it was Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter, Shrek.
Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter were both around the holiday season. Shrek was that summer. Bridget Jones's Diary was that year. I'm looking at the list right now. The Royal Tenenbaums, Training Day, Monsters, Inc., Donnie Darko. A number of movies. Oh, I Am Sam. I mean, it's not as big as some of those, but Black Hawk Down. There were a whole lot. I mean, any year you could probably point to and find a lot of big movies, but I think there are a number of like majorly influential classics that came out in 2001 as well as some cult classics like those. I mean, for me, of course, if there was a Lord of the Rings movie that year, you know, that's just about all I really cared about.
So 2001, 2002, and 2003.
Yeah. But the first one, of course, was 2001. And that's been very influential in how movies are done with Lord of the Rings and with Harry Potter. Those were as far as I can think of, the first time you had a huge budgeted franchise planned already with one movie coming out. And the studio had kind of already basically committed to it. So there were those. Amelie, Spirited Away. at least a lot of really memorable things that year.
Yeah.
Do you have I have a list here that's contending that 1994.
I was just going to say that, Ben.
Why?
Pulp Fiction, Shawshank Redemption, Leon the Professional, The Lion King, Ed Wood, Speed, Forrest Gump, True Lies.
R-rated movie.
Let's see what else and is in here.
One I loved when I was a kid, Maverick.
Maverick, Natural Born Killers, Clerks, the original. I'm going to see Clerks 3 tomorrow night.
There you go. When does it come out? That's an early screening, right?
No, it's already been, it's been out for a few weeks now, but this is their like barnstorming tour. Interview with a Vampire came out.
I just accidentally hit my, I couldn't hear you guys for a second. What movie?
Clerks 3. I'm going to go see Clerks 3. Clerks, the original Clerks came out in 1994. Yeah. The Crow, Wes Craven's New Nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's, I mean, that's.
A lot of movies came out in 94. And that's what I was going to say before Ben took it. I mean, for Disney, The Lion King is one of the best movies Disney made during that time, possibly ever.
And
so
one of the most profitable franchises they have. Yeah.
Not the new one, that's to be clear. But I mean, was a great year. And I mean, the first one I saw, like Ben said, was Pulp Fiction and The Shawshank Redemption, both phenomenal films that are gonna be on that list of people who have that following, especially with Pulp Fiction and Interview with a Vampire. Like, they're all have that same kind of cult fan base that so many movies we talked about today have. So yeah, 94 was solid. I watch a lot of these movies regularly, so.
In the comments, Topher's mentioning the year the Batman came out. That's 1989, Keaton's first Batman, followed in 1992 by Batman Returns.
Mm-hmm. 1992 was a runner-up for me, too. There was a lot of movies in 92 as well.
If you Google best movie year ever, 1939 comes up, actually. The year of Gone with the Wind, Wizard of Oz, and many greats. Sometimes we overlook some of these great films from back in the day.
What were those like in the theater, Jim?
Yeah, shut up. I saw the 75th anniversary of Wizard of Oz in the theater, and I got to tell you, it holds up. That's a movie that I saw every single year, but it's a movie that if you watch it like from the perspective of like a screenwriter or a filmmaker, every single scene actually moves. Yeah, every single scene moves the action forward, and they are they're remaking Wizard of Oz, which just blows my mind that they're redoing Wizard of Oz. I'm just not happy about that.
I'd rather see a movie about the Munchkin Hotel, actually. When are they going to do that?
Yes. All right, guys. The Munchkins got into all kinds of trouble in the Munchkin Hotel. Guys, this has been so much fun. I love talking movies, and 1982 is a special year for me, and I think you guys have heard before. It's the very first year that I was able to go out on my own. Me and some neighborhood friends, we would ride our bikes up to the Northtown Mall to watch movies, and that's where we saw E.T., Poltergeist, and Star Trek, The Wrath of Khan that summer. I remember seeing that. I didn't see Blade Runner that summer, but, man, I wish I would have. But I tell you what, that was a great year. Great year. We're going to have more great years ahead. My name is James D. Fry. You can follow me on Instagram at James D. Fry or Instagram at Jim Fry L.A. Danae, how would you like to sign out tonight?
I am Danae Sams. I am a writer and comedian, and you can follow me on Instagram at DNAYS.
Katie.
I am KT_Christine, con girl, con guy, also across all social media at KT_Christine. I would say including Twitch. I'm hoping to get back into streaming. It has been months since I have been active, but I'm hoping to produce some new content. And hopefully Danae and I will be going to, along with another con girl, which is my roommate Emily, are hoping to go to the Titanic exhibition that is coming to town in November. So if we do, we will be posting that to the con girl. So
that's awesome. That's awesome. Let's go back to Derek.
Trick or Treat is in theaters for the first time on Friday. So if you haven't seen Trick or Treat or you want to see it in theaters, try to get your tickets because it was only released direct to DVD when it first came out. So just that. Sorry.
That's the little movie that could. It has built such a following, and it is now first time ever in theaters. It's a big deal.
And it got announced that they are in talks to do a second one. So.
Oh, man. All right, we got to talk some Scare Guy stuff about that. Yeah. Derek.
Yeah, I'm Derek Sams. I'm a writer, a regular here on the show. Yeah, this is my Twitter handle, but I hardly ever use it because social media is really bad for you.
If you want to get in touch with Derek, you need to have a two styrofoam cups and a string.
There you go. Do it the old-fashioned way.
That's awesome. All right, Ben.
Hey, everybody. You can find me on all social media at BenKlieWer. You can also find me looking up the hashtag BK421. If you go to my Instagram, you can go to my link tree and see my website and all my other social media and what comedy shows you can see me at coming up. I've got a comedy show in Hollywood coming up on October 13th. I'm really excited about it's the Billy Bats Comedy Experience. Tickets are $10 online or $20 at the door. So you want to get those tickets purchased online early. Come see it. Billy always has a bunch of weirdo comedians. It should be a good show. You might get offended, but it's comedy. Not by me. I do very palatable comedy, but other comedians don't. Anyway, that's me. Good night, everybody.
The most offensive thing is when comedians are not funny. All right. Luke,
that's true.
Take us out.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Cheese on Couch. You can also find me on theconguy.com. And you can find Austin at theconkids.com. He had to jump off early because, you know, he's a con kid and he's going to college, has class at 8 a.m. So thank you, Austin, for being part of the show, talking about Conan and more. And, yeah, everybody, thank you for joining. And we love you.
I think it's Conan. All right, bye, guys.
Cool. Thanks for listening to The Con Guy Show, the official program of theconguy.com. Find us on the Weeby Geeks Collective or anywhere you listen to podcasts. And now on sci-fi.radio, Saturdays at 4 o'clock Eastern, 1 o'clock Pacific, both AM and PM. That's 9 o'clock Greenwich. And sci-fi for your Wi-Fi.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.